Be reading from Proverbs 3. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, submit to him, and he will make your paths straight.
Good morning. Good to see you on a beautiful day. Looks like it's going to be a warm, beautiful week, and so we'll be thankful for it. And let's remember this week, in case April is cold and damp and overcast, say, but wasn't February beautiful? We've had a wonderful February. We're going to talk this morning about trusting in God and what that looks like. Trusting in God and what that looks like. And I want to remember, too, we've got several out at Winterfest this morning, several of our young people and of our families, so we want to remember them. They'll be back this afternoon, but that's up in Gatlinburg, and that's a series of youth meetings and events. We got some pictures yesterday where they were involved in some activities. Looked like they were having a good time. Houston was tattletaling on his sister last night. I'm not sure what that was about, but he felt the obligation to tattle a little bit. We promptly ignored it, and so we'll see. I'll just have to share it with you. For the young man who has brought something sharp or nunchucks or something back from Gatlinburg every time he's ever been, texted us last night to tell us that his sister Kate had bought a ninja star. That's a little throwing star. Why? I do not know, but it just... I'm not sure that there's not something subliminal going on that when you drive into Gatlinburg, something starts saying, buy ninja stuff, you know, buy a knife, buy a ninja star, get some nunchucks and kill yourself or something, you know. But anyway, so I don't know what they'll come back with, but they're having a good time. Trusting in God. It's really, to me, the very essence of what we're called to do as Christians, to trust in God. I believe it to be the most difficult thing we are asked to do is to trust in God. And so I want to talk about it this morning. It's not a new theme for us, but I want to talk about it because we find sometimes certain moral and ethical and acts that God calls us to do or not to do to be very difficult. But I think trusting God by far surpasses those in difficulty. I believe it is much easier for me not to murder than it is for me to trust God. I think you'll probably find that more difficult as well. And I think if we can get the cart before the horse and begin to trust in God, it makes the other things fall into place much better. If we truly learn to trust in God. You know, the scripture says it's not possible for us to please God unless we believe that He is and that He is a rewarder of those who diligently seek Him. And so, God, for His people, it's been about trust. And I think about Abraham, and then I think it's important to realize that this trust, this faith, then leads them to action, and that's what Hebrews 11 is about. But Abraham trusted God and this promise that He made to him. And so he just leaves home and goes to a place where he doesn't know at all where he's going. I would find that really uncomfortable. I'll just be honest with you. I'd find that to be uncomfortable just to pick up and move, you know, to this place that I'm going to give you. But Abraham does that and then follows God to the point of being willing to sacrifice his son in obedience to God. And why was he willing to do that? Why was Abraham willing to offer his son as a sacrifice? Now, if you're like me, it's one of the most amazing acts of faith in all of the scripture. That Abraham was willing to go and offer his son as a sacrifice to God. I mean, he's ready to go through with it. With all the emotion that would be tied to that. Plus, he is going to kill his son and offer it. I mean, how hard, and I don't mean that, but how committed do you have to be to do that? Because Abraham is not deranged. He's not evil. In fact, quite the opposite. But he's faithful to do that because why? He's just trusting God. He trusted God was going to do what he said he was going to do. In fact, Abraham believed that God would raise him from the dead, which I think is an amazing act of faith. God will just raise him from the dead. I'll do what God asked me to do. It was because Abraham trusted himself, and he didn't lean on his own understanding, because what would our understanding have been like were we Abraham? Abraham's not unintelligent. What would you have thought? That Isaac is the son of promise, right? God has made me this promise and to my descendants, and he said it's not Ishmael, it's Isaac. Isaac is the son of promise. Now, go kill your son. Well, logically, I said, God, I understand. I was really old. My wife was really old. I understand that this baby is very special, and this is a part of promise. But I was really old when we had him, and I'm older now, right? I'm older now. And this is the son to whom the promise is going to come. So if I kill this son, then what happens to the promise? Is that not what our logical understanding would have been? And our logical understanding might have been that I love my son so much, I'm not going to give up my son for a promise that might happen. I mean, that's logical. Those thoughts had to go through Abraham's mind. But he did it because why? He trusted God. And that's what the wise man Solomon says in the Proverbs. Trust in God and don't lean on your own understanding. And so, what happens? Well, Abraham doesn't have to offer his son, although he's willing to do that. And God does fulfill his promises, and we're still talking about Abraham, right? Abraham becomes pivotal in man's relationship with God. Because Abraham was willing not to trust his own judgment, but to trust in God. Not to lean on his own understanding and his own knowledge, but to trust in God. Well, what does that look like, trusting in God, when we come more to the first century? What does that look like for the apostles and the disciples of Jesus in the first century, where they're accepted by whom? No one in authority. No one in authority. Because we've got really a battle of two authorities here in first century Jerusalem, right? You still have the Jewish authority that has been in charge, and you still have the Sanhedrin, whose power has been limited by the Romans, but who still have authority and some prestige, right? And then you got the Romans, who have the overriding authority. And neither the Jewish leaders of the time nor the Romans acknowledged Jesus and his divinity and who we know Jesus to be. None of them did. The Romans at this point are more passive about it. At this point, Jesus really has not come onto their radar. But what about the Jewish leaders? He's definitely on their radar, isn't he? And he's going to come into the Romans' radar because the Jewish leaders are going to bring him there. And so what we see in the book of Acts is we've got the apostles teaching and preaching, and what happens to them for teaching and preaching? They're thrown in jail and brought before the ruling authorities. Now, at this point, they're not put to death for that, and that's going to happen at the hands of whom? A man named Saul of Tarsus, right? Who will become the Apostle Paul. Remember that? But what does Paul say he did? He went and drugged them out of their homes and their synagogues, right? He drugged Christians out and had them beaten, even had them stoned to death. So that's what's happening in the first century. So we got Peter and John who are teaching, and they're brought before the Sanhedrin. They're brought before the judges, and they're said, you got to quit teaching this about Jesus and resurrection and these teachings of Jesus. And the reason they weren't really more forceful to them is because of the people, because lots of the people themselves were believing. But what is the response of Peter and John? You'll have to judge for yourselves, leaders, whether it's right or not for us to teach. But here's what we're going to do. We're going to follow God rather than men. And so we're going to teach about Jesus, and then you'll just have to deal with it however you think appropriate for you to deal with it. And so they continued to teach. And when the persecution heats up on the church, as it will, what happens? The church is scattered. This is kind of an aside to our lesson. Was that a bad thing? Well, if you were part of the scattered, it probably wasn't a good thing, right? Because persecution would have driven you out. Who wants to be driven out of your home and out of your community? None of us do, but we need to understand that's what's happening. That's what's happening to these people. Friends and family are disowning them. Community is disowning them, and persecution is coming down on them, so they scatter. But here's what happens. That turns out not to be a bad thing. Turns out to be a good thing for the church. And the vision that I get of this is, have you ever tried to stomp out a fire, especially with some paper or something in it, and you go to stomping it, and what happens to it? It flies, right? And where it lands, what does it do? It catches something else on fire, doesn't it? So instead of just putting it out, the fire spreads wherever those... Wherever that paper lands, if there's anything flammable, it will catch on fire and begin to burn an even wider area. And that's really what happens when the church is persecuted, that everywhere that they go, they carry the gospel with them. And so the kingdom actually expands rather than being snuffed out, because why? That's God's plan, isn't it? But were you an individual in that time, how difficult would it have been and need to guide our own paths and set our own direction? Because the wise man Solomon says, trust in the Lord, don't lean on your own understanding, and He will make your paths straight, right? If we will learn to trust in God, He will direct our lives in where we are greater use to Him and in the blessings that He has prepared for us. So as we live life, are we trusting in God to lead us and direct us? And do we do what's right, what's God's will, even when it appears to be detrimental to ourselves? Because teaching about Jesus, at least for the moment, seemed to be detrimental to the apostles and the disciples, didn't it? Following God was very difficult for Moses to go on and take on Pharaoh, because what could Pharaoh do? What happens if you tick Pharaoh off? Pharaoh's got folks that can take care of that, right? And who questions Pharaoh? Nobody. And you have to say, that's what he's being asked to do. What about Esther? You know, Esther's afraid because she knows she could be killed. I mean, when she walks in there, she knows he doesn't even have to say kill her. All he has to do is not welcome her in. You go in unannounced and you don't get welcomed, guess what? You get to leave permanently. But she's willing to do that. And it's amazing, what does her uncle or her cousin Mordecai say to Esther? How do you not know that you were brought to royalty for such a time as this? Esther, how do you not know that God hasn't made this your path to use you at this place and this time to do this job? It's a little bit of a reverse of what Solomon's saying, isn't it? Trust in God and He'll make your paths straight. Esther, trust God, because how do you not know you've been put here at this place and this time to do this thing? And she had been. That was God's plan for her whole life, for her to be there to deliver her people. The challenge for all of us is to trust God no matter what the situation is around us. Whether it be persecution, or whether it be really following God appears to make my career path challenging. Because it may not be just open persecution, but you may be in a place where you better be quiet about faith. But how do you be quiet about what God has done for us? I mean, how do you do that? I'm not saying you have to stand by the water cooler and preach. In fact, I probably wouldn't advise it because it's probably not that effective. But it's got to come out in our lives, doesn't it? It just has to come out in our conversation, in our lives, and in the way we live. Are we willing to hide that because it appears not to be good? Are we willing to trust God and say, you know, whatever comes, I'm going to do what God's called me to do. I'm going to be kind. I'm going to talk about Jesus and His resurrection. I'm going to live it in my life. I'm going to display it. And whatever comes with that comes. Because if we trust God, He will make our way straight. It is God who will put us where He wants us to be. So we need to learn to trust Him and to pray regularly that God fills us with wisdom and that God uses us to be about His business, and then be willing to let God use us in the way He wants to. And that's a scary prayer for me. Isn't it you? God, use me where You want me to be. Because sometimes when God uses people, at least for a while, it's not the most pleasant thing. And we need to be honest about that. Is God mean or cruel? Absolutely not. God is loving and God is a giver of great blessings. I know going through school, and this is kind of a shallow example, going through school, we thought some of our teachers were mean and cruel, right? I can name names. I won't do that. But I could name names of some who I thought were mean and cruel at the time. But looking back, with very few exceptions, who were the teachers that helped you take the greatest leaps? Were those who seemed mean at the time, who really called on you to be challenged, to stretch a little bit, to do a little more, to think a little more. And so sometimes God in our lives stretches us because it prepares us for something else. Sometimes God does those things that leads us to something greater. Or God uses us in His service. And what a blessing that is to be found worthy to be used by God. And here's what God knows. God knows our time here is so brief, so what discomfort we have here, what struggles we have here, are so insignificant compared to what He has prepared for us that this is just a blip. And He can, you know, I'm going to reward you so greatly that this is nothing. I'm not being mean to you. I'm actually honoring you by this great service, although there'll be some discomfort while you're here for a while, and that comes. And so here comes the question. Am I willing to suffer those discomforts and persecutions and struggles, believing that God will care for me and that God will bless me not here, not put more on me than I can bear, but certainly will reward me in the fullness of the kingdom? That's why I say truly trusting God is the most difficult thing that we, because if we only hope, and when I say that, not the biblical hope of a confident expectation, but we're only saying that when I die, I hope this is real, but I'm not really sure. Then what happens to us when the struggles get tough? We're all familiar with the saying, a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush, right? Better to take what you got than what might be coming. And if you don't truly believe in God, then it's very easy for Satan to enter us and say, all that stuff about God blessing you, it may be true, but if it's not, are you going to go through all of this? You better take what enjoyment you can get while you can. And it's pretty easy to fall for that. But if we truly trust in God and in His promises and who He is, we'll say to Satan, maybe literally, certainly figuratively, I'm trusting God and His blessings. And I'll do whatever God calls me to do. And I will let God use me in whatever way He wants to, because I know that God is good. And I'm not going to lean on my own understanding and what looks right. I'm going to let God guide my path. And I know that if God leads me in a direction, it's always the right direction, right? If God is leading, it's always in the right direction. Trust in God and lean not on your own understanding, and He will make your path straight. Jesus came and died for us because all of us are sinners. And God, at a great cost, gave His Son. Jesus believed God, didn't He? That's not a duh question. It's not a duh question. Jesus believed God. That's why He was able to resist Satan's temptations. Remember those? I'll give you all the kingdoms of the world. You can rule the world. You know, you can be famous. You can rule the world. Jesus didn't fall for those because He believed God and He honored God and He gave His life. He died. Was that comfortable? I mean, just coming to earth wasn't comfortable. And the death He went through was certainly uncomfortable. But He did it, and now where is He? He's exalted to the right hand of the Father, right? He gave His life in obedience to the Father and in love for us that we might be forgiven. And He calls us, just as Jesus trusted the Father, that we should trust God as well. And He'll make our path straight. If you need to come, why don't you do that while we stand and sing.